Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Morning show, Sportsnet 590, The Fan. It's Friday. It's Friday. Friday. We wait all week for this day. We wait all week to talk to our next guest and our insiders. It's brought to you by Don Valley North Lexus, where you can expect excellence online and in the showroom. Visit DonValleyNorthLexus.com. Ben Ennis, co-host of The Fan Drive Time, joining us from a beanbag chair. Like a college frat star.
Yeah, bro.
Have you ever atomic wedgied somebody? We need to know off the top.
No, because it's impossible. It's never happened in real life. You cannot physically wedgie someone to the degree at which the waistband goes over their head. And yes, I am on a beanbag chair because I'm currently in the process of selling my house. I'm at my in-laws in their basement, and they have this amazing like 1970s rec room with a pool table and beanbag chairs, and there's a bunch of like wood paneling down here. It's amazing.
Sounds awesome. Sounds very fun. We got Joey Votto coming this weekend. We talked about it yesterday. Like, he's Canadian. He's a little bit on the end of his career, and we were bouncing around the ideas. He's old. I was just trying to be nice, but yeah, he's at the end. But we bounced it around yesterday if he's a must-see player. Like, are you coming down to the Rogers Centre this weekend if he's playing to see Joey Votto? Is that something that like excites you, or is he someone that just doesn't move the needle for you?
You know,
Be careful what you say here.
I would really prefer him not to be like, I don't know, just a bag of bones at this point, right? Like, if he hadn't had the worst month of his entire career and going on the IL and then returning, I would feel a lot better about saying, yeah, he is a destination player. Because I've had those in my life. I've gone to Detroit to see Miguel Cabrera multiple times because I wanted to be able to say that I saw that guy live. I went down to Rogers Center to see Shohei Ohtani, Mike Trout. I went to California and saw Barry Bonds in one of the final years of his career. And you know what? Bonds wasn't the same player either, but he wasn't this, right? Like, if this is what we have in the final couple of years of Joey Votto, that's kind of depressing. I don't think he's this. I mean, he was good as recently as last season, but no, we were talking about it yesterday. He's probably the third best Canadian baseball player of all time. He's a no-doubt slam-dunk Hall of Famer.
Who's better? If he played, who are the two guys that are better?
Fergie Jenkins and Larry Walker.
You think Larry Walker's better than Joey Votto?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, you know what? You can actually split hairs there.
I disagree, but okay. But yeah, sorry, go ahead. I didn't want to derail the point. I just couldn't think of the second
outside guy of Cincinnati. Like, if he played for the New York Yankees for the, whatever, 15 years of his career, had some moments in the postseason, yeah, he'd be viewed entirely differently. No, his numbers are impeccable, and he's not going to be a first ballot Hall of Famer. He's going to be in the Hall of Fame. So, yeah, I just wish he the possibility did not exist, but it's a non-zero possibility that he is done, and it's, like, embarrassing to watch him play baseball right now.
Okay, that was too far. But, yeah, I guess that was so. Okay, both you and Blake, that was a way to put too fine a point on it at the end. That really caught me off guard. I wasn't expecting that. Okay, you and Blake are both huge Joey Votto guys. I've always found Joey Votto to be pretty cringe, and I've been on the side of, like, not being a huge Joey Votto fan. Like, I loved, for example, Justin Morneau as a Canadian baseball fan. Like, adored Justin Morneau. I've had different Canadian baseball players that I've come along that I've had a great affinity for and have not been a shadow of the player that Joey Votto was. But something about Votto, I think that he was in the NL, he was with the Reds. Like, I can count on one hand the amount of Joey Votto, like, full baseball games I've watched. And I know that's different with you and Blake. I'm just saying the Reds are not a team that I've watched a lot of. They haven't had playoff experiences. They had that one team with him and Phillips that was kind of fun, and that was it. And it was gone basically in a bat of an eye. But also, Votto, Votto had the thing where the media goes, this guy's so funny, this is personality, and I've never really found his stuff to be funny.
Weirdo.
It's never been stuff that I've been offended by whatsoever. Whenever people go, this is mean of Votto, or Joey Votto shouldn't have done this to a fan, or whatever, I've never been clutching at pearls. I just thought it was kind of cringy and lame, and a guy that was not actually as relatable or funny as people made him out to be. And then there was the Canada Baseball stuff, where the guy said, I don't care about Canada Baseball, and had to make the apology. He's a great player. He is, to me, again, the second greatest Canadian baseball player of all time. And yeah, I wanted to bring this up with you, Ennis, because I, in general, am someone who, even if a player is at the end of their career, I still want to be able to go and say, I saw this guy play. And I have an opportunity to go see the second greatest Canadian baseball player who ever lived this weekend. And I'm more like, he's not my main reason for going to the Jays. I mostly just want to go because I think the Jays will beat that team.
Yeah. Well, I think that's fair. Yeah. It's also not like his first time here, right? Like, I think he's played 9 games at Rogers Center.
But
he's,
I've never seen him play here.
You've never seen him play?
No, not live. And I can't think of, like, when's the last time these guys would have been here?
It's been a while. It's definitely been a while. But to the cringe
2017.
Thing, yeah. No, for sure.
When he got the Tip O'Neill Award and did, like, a pregame presser and stuff like that. I'm pretty sure that's the last time he was here.
Okay. The point about cringe and the personality.
7 times, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I would say that what has happened now, where he is just, the motivations are kind of head-scratching. I really don't know what's going on with him just taking over every social media platform and deciding.
His TikTok videos need to go.
I don't like that. To me, that's cringe. Like, to me, there's like some not nefarious motivation, but like, I don't know. Is he setting up his like post-playing career? Right. I don't know what's happening here.
But if you want, you know how he sets up his post-playing career? He says, hey, I want to have a post-playing media career. And they go, well, you're Joey Votto. You're one of the best hitters of your generation, so we would want your perspective. Like, nothing he does on TikTok is going to matter for him.
I don't know.
Like,
is he setting
look around
up, like,
baseball.
Is,
look
is
at
he
the
trying
people.
To be more recognizable so that, you know, he has an easier time going into the Hall of Fame because he plays in Cincinnati on this horrible team? Is
he's
he trying
in the
to
Hall
like
of Fame.
Appeal
he's walking
to
into the Hall of Fame. He's walking
I
in.
I agree.
Nobody with a Hall of Fame vote has TikTok. Like, we're talking about the Hall of Fame that's arbitrated by, like, 70-year-old white guys.
Blake, thank you. Ennis has – that was maybe Ennis's worst take ever is Joey Votto using TikTok to curry favor among Hall of Fame voters?
No.
Getting younger. You don't know.
Okay, so I don't have TikTok. I've seen a couple of them. I don't really care. The JD, your point about, like, him being funny or having personality in the past, I don't even really care about that. I love hearing the guy talk about baseball. When he actually, like, ditches the sarcasm and stuff and sits down with, like, C. Trent Rosencrans from The Athletic and talks baseball with him, I don't know that there's anyone I've enjoyed hearing their perspective on the game and the adjustments a hitter goes through as much as Joey Votto. But for me, it's not really about the personality or anything. It's that he's a lifetime 300, 400, 500 guy in terms of average OBP slugging. We've rarely seen a guy this good for this long with this type of profile and the ability to be like, hey, my swing's not there this month. I'm just going to draw a ton of walks. Hey, my swing's back. I'm going to hit a home run every day for this month. I just find him to be a fascinating baseball player and a fascinating baseball mind. And the only thing cringe about it that I find is a 35 and a 40-year-old here using the word cringe.
Okay. You're making me cringe. He is incredible. No, the way he talks about his own swing, the way he is so self-aware about where his offense is, the way he can say, you know, last year when he hits a bunch of home runs, well, how did you hit all those home runs? Well, I was trying to hit home runs. And it's weird too to go back and relive some of the media cycle surrounding him in Cincinnati. He's gotten heat at times for being too patient. You know, there have been media members who have called for him to be more aggressive in trying to hit home runs because it seemed like walks were number one on his list of priorities, which they weren't. They were just a byproduct of one of the greatest plate approaches in the history of baseball. No, he's like, if you go down the JD, you know, I love guys that walk, that have incredible plate approaches. But, he's like one of my favorite types of offensive baseball players.
Yeah. Well, this is the thing, and Blake has shown himself to be the number one. Blake, you're the number one Candy Baby. You're the number one Joey Votto fan. This was
the secret thing
behind this segment was who's the biggest Votto guy? Is it Blake or Ben? Because both of Blake. I've done hundreds of shows with Ennis, and I would say that any day there was like a dip in content, or hey, this is a bit of a slow day. Ennis's go-to dice move would be, you know what I think the Jays should do? Is they should eat the money and trade for Joey Votto.
I thought that's what we're going to talk about today. We're not talking about that?
Yeah, exactly. And so it's just, no. But now they unequivocally cannot do that. Imagine they traded for someone who somehow is worse than Raimel Tapia from the left side. No, thank you. There's no way that you would want Joey Votto at this point of his career. But, yeah, I think that this is sort of... I guess one of the challenges with baseball is that, to me, Joey Votto has been one of those guys who, for baseball nerds like the two of you, is someone that's given a big quote. He's been a Hall of Fame caliber player. He's the second greatest Canadian of all time, and yet you don't feel compelled to go watch him play when he's visiting the city where he's from for the last time. I know that there are some people that do feel that way. I'm just saying that... I asked you, Ben, if you wanted to go to one of the games this weekend. You said, I'll get back to you. You weren't like, I have to go see Joey Votto.
Blake is not going.
And Blake has his family in town, but it's less like, you're not going to see Joey Votto. You're like, you guys aren't making this appointment viewing, and you both love Joey Votto. I'm just saying that I'm a huge basketball fan that when Tim Duncan came here for the last time, I made sure that I went and saw Tim Duncan, for example. Like, it's just like national leagues where players are bigger profiles as star players. And granted, he's like a multi-time champion. It's a different sport. It's like you feel more of an obligation to go see those. And I think that this is just kind of the nature of baseball where you're like, well, Joey Votto, yes. Thanks for coming out.
Yeah.
I mean, in my case, he's a 38-year-old. First baseman who I've seen in Toronto before, I've seen in, like, I've gone to Cincinnati and watched Reds games before. Yeah. Like, it's just with the weekend didn't work out. If I was in town, I would absolutely go. But yeah, there aren't that many guys in baseball that are like appointment viewing like that. And usually they're, you know, red hot starting pitchers or something like that.
Yeah, I went the last guy that I saw in the city that I went, oh, I have to go see him, was Kershaw. And usually it is National League players. But that's the last game I went to where it was, oh, I'm going to this for this specific reason. I went and saw Shohei, obviously, but that was a different thing where I knew I was going to probably see him a bunch, but I still was like, oh, I'm going to go down to the Angels. That's just a part of it. It wasn't like, hey, this is the only reason I'm going to this game, or this is why I'm paying for an extra ticket.
All right, twofold. One, this weekend, that's unfair. First of all, I had a very positive conversation about potentially going downtown, leaving my family.
My point was not to shame you and Blake. My point was just simply that you two guys are literally the biggest Joey Votto fans I know, and neither of you are 100% going to see him play. So you can make the qualifiers. I'm just saying that it's just neither of you guys is desperate to say goodbye to Joey Votto.
I like that Ben talks about getting permission to go to the Jays game like Danny Ainge talks about the trades he didn't make. Well, we had some very positive conversations about it. There was interest on both sides. But it's ultimately, I wasn't offering my wife enough trade-offs to go to the game.
Well, there's still a back and forth happening here. I wouldn't say that negotiations are completely finished. Interesting. You know? Like, yeah, there might be more that I can give, but we'll see. The other thing that you said is absolutely true. The baseball does not actually lend itself too much for appointment viewing of individuals, right? Well, we've seen this even with the home team, like when Roger Clemens was winning back-to-back Cy Young Awards, or, you know, Roy Halladay was the best pitcher in all of baseball. There was no huge bumps on their start days. And I think you made fun of me once when I said I wanted to go down to go see Shohei Ohtani, and you said, well, you know, he's one player who's going to get, what, maybe four plate appearances, and maybe he's going to take a walk, and in one individual game, there's no guarantee he does anything.
To be fair, that was before Shohei became one of the not only best pitchers and best hitters in baseball. That was at the very beginning of his career. But yes, I agree that I did make this point. I think it was more about Mike Trout, but yeah, you're right.
Yeah, so you made fun of me. It's amazing how you've taken the other side of the argument, as you do many times in sports discussions.
Yeah, that doesn't sound like JD.
Sometimes
you're a flip-flopper.
Dude, sometimes I I recently went on a date, and this girl asked me, so what with your show, do you ever find yourself like you repeat yourself or you go back on something you say? And I went, yeah, it's like my whole thing.
She definitely doesn't listen.
No, I just went like, yeah, it's what I do. That's actually the whole bag is just repeating what I say multiple times to the point where I beat a point to death and then reneging on that point once I've beaten it to death. That's basically my entire shtick. So this is a good pivot point, though, off of what you said about Votto, how, hey, he's criticized for taking too many walks. This week I've been kind of criticizing Vladdy on the longest hit streak of his career. Like, Blake, what's the numbers at this point over the hitting streak? It's like an OPS of 7-something. It's down. It's
yeah,
not...
it's under 800 and hasn't had an extra base hit since May 5th.
I can't remember his last
hit game during there, too.
Yeah, I can't remember the last time Vladdy hit an extra base hit.
May 5th, I just told you.
Yeah, I know, but that's what. Yeah, you said it, but I'm just saying that it feels even longer than that because they play baseball games every. Although, actually, not the Jays. The Jays have now scheduled in 2 off days every week. This is the new, when is baseball going to end at this rate? Just out of curiosity, with 2 off days.
Well, you're
going to
play
week.
30 games in 31 days, yeah. And then you're going to play 15 in 31 days.
Is there going to be December baseball this year? Like, is that what's going on here? I have no idea. But either way. What is the level of how we discuss a guy like Vladimir Guerrero Jr. in May when he's obviously a superstar player? They need him to be an MVP caliber player to reach the full potential of this team. He is young, and we've seen him have these kind of blips before, dips before, where, yeah, he's becomes an infield – or not an infield guy, but a singles guy, a singles hitter – like, just where are you at in terms of how you have a Vladimir Guerrero conversation after his what could have been an MVP year, and it's May 20th, and he is hitting the baseball every single game?
I have a conversation like I had when he broke into the major leagues, except people don't shout me down anymore. Because when he entered the major leagues, and I said I was slightly disappointed that he had a 780 OPS, people yelled at me because of
Ariel Helwani, every time he comes on, references it. It's like his number one hobby horse thing to reference.
Yes.
Except for he says it's me and not just you and I and whatever. Yeah, go on.
But yeah, no, when you finish as the best hitter in the American League and runner-up for MVP, then you've set the standard, right? You've proven that you can do it. I wouldn't say that it's concerning because, like, all the hard hit numbers are all good, and yeah, he is taking his walks. I mean, he's getting back into the zone a little bit, but the ground ball rate is getting back to where it was a bit of a concern. He figured it out, right? Like Dante Bichette feels like the missing ingredient to all this. Bring Dante back because it seemed he had the ear of every great Blue Jays hitter and was able to change them into their best self. But no, he's back. There's a bunch of double plays in that 15 game hit streak as well. Everything's on the ground. Everything is a line drive and not a deep fly ball. He's hitting the ball hard again. This is what we said a couple of years ago, that if he could just lift that launch angle just a little bit, because those balls are coming off the bat at 110 miles an hour. It's just they're on the ground. And he managed to do that. It's in him to do it. So I don't know if he has to go through the tape, if he needs to get Dante on the phone. But, yeah, what we're seeing this month is eerily similar to what we saw early in his career.
There are a few concerning things in the profile. And, Ben, you mentioned the hard hit numbers. And when he puts a drive into one, yeah, they're there. But this is the lowest hard hit rate of his career in terms of how often he barrels up a ball. It's also... You mentioned the ground ball rate. Like, this is the least he's hit fly balls ever. He's striking out at a career high rate, which is, not all that concerning because it's still not a very, very high rate or anything. But you look at some of the component stuff, and he's getting way fewer pitches than, like, obviously pitchers have pitched around Vlad forever, but he's getting even fewer pitches in the zone. And he's responded to that not by taking more walks, but he's swinging at more stuff out of the zone than he ever has. So I'm seeing a guy who is maybe either frustrated with not getting enough to drive, and he's just like, I'm gonna expand my zone to put stuff in play and try to get this ball moving. And a guy who, maybe the profile doesn't fit that. Maybe he's got to sit back and just, what do they throw? 37% of pitches inside the zone to him. You maybe have to narrow the approach instead of expanding. Obviously, he has the plate coverage and the the bat-to-ball ability to hit anything outside of the zone. He's Vladimir Guerrero Sr.'s son. He could probably go down on one knee and hit one out of the dirt if he really wanted to. But what we're seeing right now, to me, is a guy who is either frustrated with the pitch diet he's getting and reaching a little bit for that, or a guy who hasn't quite figured out how to adjust to not getting the hittable stuff anymore and finding bad pitches to drive.
Yeah, and it's weird where like the slump started. Basically, go back to the 3-homer game at Yankee Stadium, and these have been the numbers. It's been pretty consistent, right? And at that point, well, you know, Shai Davidi actually raised a pretty good point when I talked to him the other day, that what else happened in that game? Like, a couple of different injuries, right? Is it possible that he's nursing some bumps and bruises? This is a guy that wants to play every day? Yeah, and everybody is. But, yeah, is that possible? Yep. Yeah, definitely is possible. But, no, you're right. Like, the approach is, I mean, I look at a guy like Juan Soto, who I've spent a lot of airtime over the last couple of days talking about. But that guy plays on a team with nobodies, and there's no lineup protection, but he still takes his walks because that's what he does. That's what makes him a great player. And no Teoscar Hernandez and a Teoscar Hernandez who's not his best self. I don't believe in lineup protection, but it really does feel like Vlad feels like he has to carry the entire burden of getting this team out of this offensive slump. And it feels like if some of the guys around him start supporting him offensively, then maybe he'll just be able to take a deep breath and return to his more patient self.
Dude, I'm glad you brought that up, because that's sort of where I was going to go with this. Is I actually do believe that that's part of what's happening here. Maybe I'm just being a Vladdy protectionist. Maybe I'm just being a homer, but to me, I think there's a difference between being a Juan Soto who comes into the year and knows that his team sucks, yeah, and goes, well, my team sucks. There's no expectation for me. I'm just being Juan Soto. I'm getting my numbers. Versus a Vladdy who's coming into the season off of his MVP year, where he goes, last year was the trailer, this year is the movie. And he shows up and he says, I got to be that MVP caliber player again. And then all of a sudden, Gurriel turns into a just complete bum. And Teoscar Hernandez gets hurt, and now there's guys around him that aren't performing, and Bo for a large portion of the season too was not performing very well. And then you're there and he's just like, oh man, I think that maybe there is an element of, we don't believe in quote unquote lineup protection over a large sample, even though I think I probably believe a little bit more than the two of you.
No, I believe in it too. It's one of those where like at the macro level, lineup protection doesn't exist if you take the entire 30-team, 162-game sample. But I certainly think, like, especially against elite pitchers and stuff like that, you can see it. It's one of those things that doesn't hold up over a huge sample, but there are definitely good pieces of anecdotal evidence and certain lineups or certain players or certain pitchers who exploit it.
So, Blake, then, are you kind of buying this theory a little bit with what's going on with Vladdy right now? Because I feel like he's got a lot of weight on his shoulders, and you're seeing that kind of manifest itself into the guy turning into, yeah, a singles guy.
Yeah, and I think, look, the fact that he's getting the lowest in-zone percentage that we've almost, like he's getting like a Barry Bonds level of how few pitches are you getting in the zone. He's seeing the fewest fastballs of his career. I think a lot of that has to do with maybe less so now as the Jays round into health and the lineup gets a little deeper again. But there was a long stretch there where it's like, who cares if you put Vlad on first base? Zach Collins is hitting cleanup. Yeah. Raimel Tapia is hitting fifth. Why would you give Vlad anything to hit as a solo home run when you can put him on first base and there's such a little chance of him coming around?
Yeah.
I think that's a real thing. And I think if Teo gets going, and then if you get, you know, Kirk's turned a corner a little bit, if you get a Gurriel turning a corner at any point, you know, it's not, you're still going to pitch around Vlad. Vlad's still going to see the lowest rate of fastballs on the team and the lowest rate of stuff in zone on the team. But maybe it gets back a little closer to, you know, his 2020 profile of pitches to hit rather than this extreme, you know, Bonds light.
Yeah. Right now it feels like, if you, well, you know me, I like to do my confidence rankings and who I want at the dish. Right now, number one is Bo. Number two is probably still Vladdy. Three is Springer. Four is Kirk. You don't have Springer ahead of Kirk in your confidence rankings, Ennis? You made kind of like a
no
face.
I would do Bo, Springer, Kirk at the current moment.
you would go Kirk over Vladdy. It's a big spot. You need one hit, and you're such a liar. Anyway, whatever. It's fine. It's just, it is what it is. Yeah, okay. Yeah. That's where you get into trending into hater territory. I guess the main reason I brought this up today is that we do a daily talk radio show. He's one of the biggest stars in the city, and it's kind of difficult to talk about him right now because if you have a hardline opinion, he's probably going to make you end up looking foolish. But yeah, he has not been good enough. If you're pointing to reasons why the Blue Jays or reasons for optimism about where they can get better, I would say that like Vladdy getting back to yesteryear's Vladdy is chief among them. We've talked about all the pieces around him, and he's been better than those guys. But yeah, there's a lot of room to grow here. And if it is the trailer to the movie or whatever, and there was a step he could take, we're pretty far ways away from that so far this season. Okay, so it's a sample size sport though, right? And this is the last Blue Jays topic that I have for you today. So I'm reluctant to criticize Vladdy when the sample size is small, and I know that over a large one now, after last season, he's a stud and he's an MVP guy. The bullpen is a different story. Is it fair enough, or is it too early for me to really feel like this front office should be kind of on blast for the way they built this bullpen? We brought it up. They don't have any swing and miss guys. And they added one dude in the offseason, that was Jimmy Garcia, and it's not their fault that he's regressed to the degree he has. I guess maybe it is. It's a results-based business, so if you sign someone to cash, it's not great. But they're one of the worst swing-and-miss teams in baseball. They don't have a lot of arms that really play out of the pen. It's going back to already like a Ryan Barucki situation the second you lose your one lefty in Meza. Romano has been someone that's dealt with some health stuff throughout his career, so he should be fine, but it's not like he and Julian Merriweather, you're surprised that these guys can't stick for long stretches of time. Where you just add in terms of the overall construction of this bullpen, because it's hard for me not to look at teams like the Yankees and Rays, who have a bunch of internal dudes that have been converted, that throw absolute gas, punch people out, and the second you get into like a sixth inning of a baseball game, you've got a variety of options rather than the Blue Jays, which basically have one path when they're fully healthy.
Yeah, that might be next year for this Blue Jays team, because I don't know if you saw that Dunedin Blue Jays game where they struck out 24
yeah,
dudes.
Yeah, and I read Ben Nicholson-Smith's article that they're starting to cultivate that more in the minor league system. But again, this team is supposed to be here now, and I think about guys like how they had Thomas Hatch as a really good relief pitcher, and then they kind of went back to the well of trying to make him more of a starter. I am kind of looking at this and saying, hey, why didn't they address this better? Why didn't they figure out a way to do this differently, especially considering that if we're circling reasons why they didn't make the playoffs last year, having a bullpen that's similar to the one that we're seeing right now is chief among them.
No, I mean, they didn't make the playoffs last year because they had like the worst bullpen in all of baseball, and they were giving up six runs routinely, like in the sixth and seventh inning. Like the starter would not go nine, and they would lose every baseball game because, you know, Trent Thornton was a house of cards, and anybody coming out of that bullpen door was just a gasoline tank, right? And this bullpen is better than that. Is it the weakest link on this team? I think that's an absolutely fair assessment. It needs to improve. It's, as we know, the easiest area to improve. The Blue Jays did take that horrible, putrid, awful bullpen a season ago and turn it into a serviceable one with a couple of guys that are still in the bullpen. But you're right. No, you're right to point out the lack of swing and miss. Because, yes, they're among the worst teams in all of baseball in reliever K per nine. Absolutely. It's something that they will 100%, again, be out in the trade market trying to acquire. But as we know, it's an area that's fraught when you go into an offseason trying to address it, right? Going out and getting guys that are 100% surefire fixes in the bullpen, even a Jimmy Garcia, who looked good early on in the season and hit a bump on the road, and his K numbers are way down as well. It's just those guys, they have years where they're not that. And it's hard to bank on somebody for 2-3 years being that when you're going.
But that's why you need organizational depth. And this is kind of my point, is that it's like these guys are all about the farm and the depth and the waves and the blah, 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 blah. And yeah, I agree. For the most part, they've done a great job of that. And you look at even the infield depth, right, or the catching depth, and you go, wow, they've got Aralvis Martinez coming and Gabriel Moreno coming and Jordan Groshans is still a part of the organization. Like, they've been great at depth in certain areas. But this kind of remains the sneaky bugaboo with these guys, is that for whatever reason, they just have not been able to have, like, fun, exciting arms that have come up through the minor leagues that are going to help out with their bullpen. I guess, but that's not really now. This is supposed to be the winning cycle, and they didn't. This isn't surprising them. So I just sort of look at it and go, why are you guys so far apart from where the Yankees and Rays are, two teams in your division that you have to kind of compare yourself to and steal from, borrow from in terms of the ways you win? Well, this is how they're winning. Like, every night when I turn the Yankees game on, they got another nasty guy coming out of the bullpen where I go, oh my God, Chad Green is their, like, sixth inning, fifth inning. Like, you know, he comes in early in baseball games. They have, you could argue the Yankees have three closers. They have just so many arms.
The worst.
Yeah, it's actually true. He is their worst guy. He's just he's the name brand closer, but he's not their best pitcher. Either way, I think that it's a point of curiosity where I'm like, why can't they seem to figure this one out? Like, they kind of sink at making outfield depth too, internally. Like, that hasn't been great, but the relief pitching thing is hurting them right now.
Yeah, well, I would imagine they're going to fast track some of those guys. Make them bulk guys, make them shorter stint guys. There's a guy in Double-A, Hayden Younger, who's a starter, but he's basically an opener, right? He throws 35, 40 pitches a game. He has a high K per nine rate, and he's in Double-A. He's, you know, stone's throw away from the major leagues.
I don't need to see any more Casey Lawrence, so get this guy up here. Like, honestly, get him up.
I think Adrian Hernandez would probably be the first one to get a crack, but that guy's on the radar.
He throws a screwball, apparently.
Which I don't know. He's got a 47% K rate. Whatever.
Yes.
I don't know what StatCast is picking up, the difference between a screwball and a forkball and an ephus or whatever. Like, I don't know what the AAA cameras are picking up, but anything that's striking guys out almost 50% of plate appearances, I want to see more of it.
Here's what I would say. This is where you forego development stuff to the degree of, hey, let's not freak out too much about whether or not these guys get hit hard here or whether they're supposed to be starting pitchers or whatever. This is actually a year where I'm going, let me see some of these younger swing and miss guys already and just give them shots, give them cracks, put them up here.
And Hernandez isn't a starting prospect, right? Like, he's started a handful of games over 5 years in the minors. He's a reliever. He's a guy that I would imagine we're going to see in the bullpen sometime this year, because I think he's even Rule 5 eligible next year. So you got to see him at some point anyway. You got to get him on the 40-man. You might as well give him a look when he's pitching this well.
And to be Mr. Cynical, he does throw the screwball, which is actually like you turn your arm the other way, which is not exactly great for the old elbow there. So, yeah.
What's the difference? What's the opposite of pronate?
Yeah. Supinate.
Yeah, there you go. So he's gonna have that like helix forerarm bones, the two bones there when they start to twist around each other. Really great. Fine. Yeah, get those innings out of him now before the arm explodes.
Okay. With that, it's now time for something to chew on, brought to you by Great Canadian Meats.
Yum yum yum.
Tiger Woods. He's playing in a major. Good. That's good, right? It's good. He shot a 74 in the first round, but the 74 is not what I want to discuss. Tiger Woods, after shooting his 74, quote, "I just can't load it. Loading hurts. Pressing off it hurts. Walking hurts. Twisting hurts. It's just golf. If I don't do that, I'll be okay." End quote. If Tiger Woods is playing in majors, should he be bitching about his leg pain when he shoots poorly, Ben Ennis?
Well, I think I do think he's being honest. I mean, should he not be honest? I don't know.
So
I guess
I would say don't play if it's that to the degree.
Oh, well, I think you're going to get your wish. Like, honestly, doesn't it feel like
we're
headed?
Well, JB said that yesterday. Like, if you're playing, you thought he was going to be in better health. Like, we were anticipating that he had this time. The course was going to fare better, less walking. It's not Augusta. Hey, he had all this time, all this prep. We honestly thought that he was going to be in better shape. And yesterday was the complete opposite. So you don't feel great about him even completing today.
How come John Daly can take a golf cart? Like, why isn't Tiger
taking a cart? Yeah, that's
true. What's happening here? John Daly with cart number 69, smoking two cartons of cigarettes and like 15 Diet Cokes. No, we're nearing the end here. Like it seems twofold, right? Physically, the body doesn't look like it's going to hold up, and I really don't think Tiger's going to come out here, you know, week after week and embarrass himself. Like if he really doesn't have a chance, I think he'll just pack it up. And man, he gave it his all. Apparently, he took one day off between the Masters and the PGA Championship.
But this is it's just very strange to me because Tiger. We already know that part of the Tiger Woods story is that he has pushed his body too far. And granted, it was the military training stuff where he really started to get himself into trouble physically, beyond the fact that he had taken so many swings in his career that it impacted the way that his like body was. But I have a bit of a tough time with this one because it's Tiger Woods. He's already established who he is. I don't think that there's like a great ceiling of somewhere to go. But we're doing this thing where we go, don't doubt Tiger Woods, but then if he performs poorly, we go, you're not allowed to discuss Tiger Woods. Mm. And then we do, I normally say when athletes show up, I go like, I don't really want to hear about your bumps and bruises or injuries because you've decided to play. And if you can play, then just do it. Like, I hate when people use injuries as an excuse. It drives me insane. It's one of my biggest sports pet peeves. Like, yeah, you're right. He's being truthful and I don't mind that. But it's kind of like, well, if it's to the point where you're saying this, like that quote I just delivered to you is bad. I can't press off it. It hurts to twist. It hurts to do. That's a lot of pain. Dude, relax. Take some time off your body then. One or the other kind of thing for me. It's like, are we evaluating him as a mascot? Are we evaluating him as a player? Are we evaluating him as a pro golfer? I guess I don't really know what the rules are of Tiger Woods anymore.
We have to evaluate him. Like, he has to be viewed as a human being, which, like, for the first time in me watching him, and I guess the weekend at Augusta was the same thing. Like, I had convinced myself there's a guy who won a Masters in 2018, right? After it seemed like that was an impossibility. He was playing at Augusta, like a year after almost losing his leg. I truly had convinced myself that this man could take the impossible and make it possible. I know we're at a place where he's just flesh and bone. He's just a man. It sucks because he is not. He's been so much more than that throughout his entire career. But no, he appears done.
Yeah, it's tough because every time you talk about a golf major that he's there at, and he knows this better than anybody, he's going to be the lead story, right? To your audience is how are you going to connect with people? Well, Tiger's at the Open, Tiger's at the PGA, Tiger. I wonder at what point he's not the lead story when he's at a tournament. I'm not sure we see that this year, but yeah, it's kind of curious when that's going to happen. Ben Ennis, you've been our insider today. You were brought to us by Don Valley North Lexus, where you can expect excellence online and in the showroom. Visit DonValleyNorthLexus.com. Thanks for making time, buddy. We appreciate it. We'll talk to you soon.
All right. See you guys. Thanks.
Ben Ennis. You can hear him later on Fan Drive Time. When we return, what's the bad guys called in Star Wars? The Death Star? No, that's not it. The Empire.
The Evil Empire. Yeah. Right?
The Empire.
I don't know if they have a different name. I'm the wrong guy to ask about this, but I'm trying to help you out.
Yeah, same.
The Empire.
The Dementors.
State, not the Empire State that you think of is going to win again.
Yeah, if you're trying to pivot us to basketball playoffs,
let me just do a tease. It's a tease. You don't have to deliver all the teases.
Well,
I'm just saying,
people are going to be like Empire State. Are we going to talk about a New York team? No,
that's my point.
No New York team whatsoever.
No, the Empire State is in the Evil State is going to win another championship.
That's Evil next. Empire is what you call it. Yeah.
The Fan Morning Show. JD Blake and Ailish, Sports at 5:90. The Fan.
The smartest takes on the biggest stories in sports. The Fan Drive Time with Ben Ennis and Stephen Brunt. Be sure to subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Sportsnet 590, The Fan. Bam, 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 bam. We'll be right back.
Fan Morning Show, Sportsnet 590 The Fan, JD Blake and Ailish. So, I was going to save this for the Wake and Rake, but Ailish, yeah, the second the show was over, Blake and I talked privately about how we both loved the Celtics yesterday and that we were both betting our life savings on them. And that
it's funny because you're like, ooh, I love this bet. Totally, totally think it's
a
good
okay,
one.
But this, well, is, and this, is what I'll, this is what I'll discuss. No, no. No, but actually, this is what I'm going to discuss in terms of the Wake and Rake is we're agreeing to a parlay together, so it's tough because you have to go with the parlay. That's the nature of that. It's not our just best bets. It's like a parlay pieces. But, yeah, how openly should we be when it comes to when we're fading a pick? I think we have to be. I think that we have to be honest and transparent with the audience when it's like we're fading hard and like, yeah, yesterday I put a lot of money on the Celtics. They were like – they were going to be both Blake and I's best bet. And when you started, we both pivoted to secondary golf bets. And both of those got smashed. Corey Connors plus six.
Now, the trickle effect was bad.
Yeah, it was a bad trickle effect. In defense of the pick is we got – this is, again, the issue with the 8:30 spot for it is, like, we find out shortly after the show ends that Al Horford has been upgraded from doubtful to in.
Had I known
Marcus
that.
Smart bumps from probable
that was
to
Al
in.
Horford. Those Al Horford
had
minutes,
I known that, was, that, yeah, that
I don't know that Al Horford was – a 25-point
He was worth 30 points for
Al Horford.
10 points and 3 rebounds.
Yeah.
But
the post-COVID guys. Al Horford. Although if anybody's bounced back from COVID, it's him. The third time that he's bouncing back from COVID. Okay, so, but okay, this is the...
Yeah, the all-time leader in COVID.
Do you guys have any faith that any of these teams remaining is going to beat Boston? Because this is the way that I would be putting it. The only way Boston loses the NBA championship this year is if they choke.
I would say, look, it's the final four we're at right now, right? Like, every one of these teams has gotten there for a reason. Dallas has the best player left.
Miami's reason being that they face nobody good. Yes, there's a reason behind all of this.
I mean, that Sixers team, they did what the Raptors couldn't and broke them.
Oh, please. This is actually, we're going to do a discussion on the Raptors and, like, you know, we've done the whole Leafs, how we feel about the Leafs off of Tampa. Our Raptors off of how we feel about watching the Sixers conversation, I for me, is very different from the Tampa Bay Toronto
discussion.
Oh, I'm
sorry that the team that was projected to win 36 games only took the Sixers to 6, and the champion aspiration Heat beat them in 6. Tough break. Anyway, no, I think Boston is the best team left. I thought whoever won that Boston-Milwaukee series was going to be my personal favorite to win the championship. Every team has a reason that they're there. Luka Doncic is probably the best player left in the playoffs, and certainly the foremost beersman left in the playoffs. The Golden State Warriors are the Golden State Warriors, and you see how easy things get for them when Steph has even like a slightly above average Steph game. We saw that in game one. And the Heat, the Heat are probably number four of the teams left. And even if Kyle Lowry were to return, you don't really expect a ton of impact from Kyle Lowry at this point coming off of injury. But the Heat may be in trouble here. Like, Tyler Hero has been a huge part of their team and what they do all year. And it looks right now like you can't play that guy big minutes in a playoff series. Duncan Robinson, same kind of thing. Is you can't. Duncan Robinson, we knew, probably wouldn't be playable big minutes in a playoff series. But Tyler Hero, historically, has at least like tried hard enough and has enough size to be not a complete guy who gets obliterated defensively. And the Celtics have hunted him pretty relentlessly. And I love Max Strus and Gabe Vincent. But if you're starting Max Strus and Gabe Vincent up against Marcus Smart and Jaylen Brown.
Love those guys, but yeah.
Okay. Yeah, like. Strus and Vincent against Smart and Brown. Like, come on. Like, what are you doing there? And then I think scariest for Miami is that Bam hasn't looked amazing, and he really, really, really struggled against that smaller unit Boston used last night with Grant Williams at the five. I think Miami's in a little bit of trouble here.
If we're going to talk about things where you go, well, what the Raptors' path forward to something would be, I don't know if it's ever going to be possible that Scotty Barnes becomes the level of scorer that Jason Tatum is, but the Celtics formula with Jaylen Brown as a number two, and he's an elite number two. He's a good high level number two, but he's clearly not a number one. It's actually kind of how I feel about Siakam. And where you go, man, if they could just find a way to get that timeline figured out, or they can get closer to that with Barnes, if Siakam can have a longer prime, if he can extend his prime into like his age 30, 31 seasons, it's going to make the Raptors a lot more interesting. Because like that's what I think about when I watch Jaylen Brown, is Siakam can just have this exact impact on a game where there are going to be nights where you go, man, this guy's a number one. But for the most part, you go, no, not really. Like those big pressure moments, you feel that way, but that he just impacts every part of the game. And I think Siakam can do that too, right? It's the playmaking, it's the rebounding, it's the ability to run the floor, it's the ability that when they're both at their best, they can put pressure on the rim. The problem is Brown is much younger, and he and Tatum are obviously perfectly tied to one another. I don't know. I don't think the Celtics team is going anywhere. I think that they're very well constructed. I think there's even room for them to improve and continue to get better as a group, which is one of the scarier things when it comes to what they could potentially do here. I think Boston is still sneakily more it's not a destination for basketball players. We've seen that year over year, but yeah, just I think they're going to win. I think they're going to get into that finals against the Warriors, and we're going to find out that there's a gap. But, because you're right, Blake. We've done the presumptive favorite. Everybody had that Milwaukee-Boston take. Mm-hmm. But I really believe, as of this moment, that once we get into that Warriors series with Boston, it's going to be kind of jarring for people that there's a gap between those two teams.
And it's looked like Tatum had a rough start to the last series, but it looks like he's shaking that off completely, right? Like, he looks like a superstar again, like he did for the bulk of this season.
Yeah.
He's going to make all NBA. He's going to enter next season probably on the fringes of the discussion of, is this guy a top 10 player in the NBA? I know we're going to do more of the, like, what do you learn about the Raptors from the rest of the NBA playoffs over the course of the next couple weeks, but something that stands out to me watching that game last night and watching the lineups that Boston was at their best with, and it's not a perfect comparison because Robert Williams is a real rim-running vertical threat and a more traditional bouncy rim protector than anyone on the Raptors roster. However, Boston played seven guys last night, and none of them were bigger than 6'9". So if you're talking about, hey, do you have to have a traditional center? Do you have to address this? Or can you continue to, you know, obviously you'd like to have some more size and some more rim protection, but you don't, there's nothing saying you have to have a seven-footer, or even that the Raptors' strategy can't scale in the playoffs. I think Boston's an interesting comparison point for them to look at and not necessarily replicate, because Toronto was doing this anyway. But I think what you're looking at with Boston is like, yeah, your defense can kind of get close to that level. It's what is Boston doing offensively that you can borrow from? And obviously you can't just take Tatum, but you can see, hey, how do you work Grant Williams into an offense like that? How do you work an offense that has Al Horford and Robert Williams together and the spacing's not awesome, but you've got size everywhere and everyone can pass a little bit? I think there's some cool lessons for the Raptors to be watching closely here with how Boston scores.
Either way, I'm terrified of the Celtics winning. And it's not even because I don't like the Celtics, because I don't feel the same thing that a lot of Raptors fans do, which is a pure hatred for the Boston Celtics. But what I do have is a hate for the city of Boston getting another championship. Like, we in Toronto, I feel like, should be having accumulated more championships. We don't have a football team or an NFL team. Sorry, Argos fans that just freaked out like Ailish wearing her Argos shirt today. We don't have a professional NFL football team. However, it just makes me sick that Boston would have another parade. I really hope someone doesn't give Boston another parade. And I actually kind of like the Celtics. I like the Celtics team, and that's what sucks, is that I find myself rooting for them at times where I go, oh, I like the Celtics team. I really enjoy these guys. And then the reality snaps in that I'm going to see the guys from Boston doing the, we got another championship, and then that stupid kid with his sign of, I only know championships, and here in Toronto we have the Raptors championship. That's it. Like, and yeah,
I only know championship. Singular.
Yeah, exactly. And it was so good. Championship so good. Let's take a break. Let's come back. Let's talk to a guy that has one of those. Mike Commodore next on the Fan Morning Show. JD Blake and Ailish, Sportsnet 590, The Fan.